This is the next day of the human rights retreat. Third day. It was like forever. Which is wonderful. So yesterday we looked at this case in Entangling Vines called Timing Tends the Hearth. And it was a very interesting, entertaining day. As a particular style of koan work, a kind of open koan style. And we all did it in one way or the other, so we can kind of look at it together in retrospect. And just to remind you of the story that it was lecture day. The Zen master, the teacher of the particular monastery, would give talks on a certain day of the week. And the monks would attend, clearly, and sometimes the lay people from the town or wherever would come and listen as well. And the teacher didn't appear, so the head monk, that's his job, went down and knew where the Zen master would be, in the little hut of the unfathomable old woman, where he was tending the fire and she was stirring the rice, pot of rice. And he says, "The monks have been waiting a long time. Today's lecture day. Why haven't you come?" And then Chiming says, "If you give me a turning phrase, I'll come. If you can't, you can go east, west, north, up, down. Heaven or hell, up to you." So the question was, if you were the head monk and you were given that test, that question from the Zen master, how would you respond? And they were wonderful responses, just such a wide variety of answers. Some were very robust, and others were polite, and some were grandfatherly, and others were headmasterly, and some were therapeutically, diplomatically. It was just so interesting. As Margie often says, that what koans do is they show you how your mind works. Okay, it's kind of a irresistibly transparent process. Okay, and it's not so much which answer is correct, which answer is incorrect, but is one willing to just sort of enter the story? Become a player in the story, become a part of it. And just go for it. One of the key kind of tricks in the story, or features in the story, is the clear and obvious fact that the Zen master is not doing his job. Okay. And how do we respond to that? A lot of people ask me what my answer was, and I probably gave various things, but I can't actually remember being asked this koan. I'm not sure I did it formally, but I think my instinctive thing, just to answer your question, was I think I just took the Zen master by the hand and said, "Come, O boss." But that's just by way of evening the playing field. It's no better or worse than any other answer. Just we each find our own one and kind of live with it, you know. And it doesn't matter. But a key to this aspect of the koan, which is clearly a prominent one, is in another koan about chimming. These are not koans in the form of questions, but it's just a single sentence. Case 106, for those of you that like that. It's like Anglican priests who remember the numbers of hymns. Oh, I love 103. You know, that story. Anyway, this is 106. Yeah. It says, "Chimming was always free and unrestricted in spirit. No one could tell whether he was foolish or wise." Okay. That's the kind of sets the tone, really. He always plays a kind of a joker role. And one never knows if it's deliberate or accidental or what. But it always calls out a kind of response from us, you know. Do we need to correct it? Do we respond in some other way? What do we do? And this really gives us a kind of an insight into how we are, how we work, how we conventionally respond to things. So, in 172, in the koan we're looking at, the head monk himself, in fact, has something of that in his own response to the situation. He says, "Today's lecture day, the assembly has been waiting a long time. Why haven't you returned?" And one way of looking at the koan is that Chiming sees this guy as caught in some kind of complaint and right and wrong and sort of slight headmasterly thing. I mean, I have great sympathy for the head monk, but anyway, that's also neither here nor there. So, as a Zen teacher, he sees this and says, "Well, I'll go with you, but I want to see how you be clear first. You be clear." And then, in the story, anyway, and of course, this is a bit of theatre as well, so don't mind it. The head monk puts on his bamboo hat and starts walking back to the monastery. Again, is it right or is it wrong? Is not the question. If we get stuck in that, we're stuck again, as we do in our lives. That's our life. That's why we're sitting here, you know. So, already in the story itself is an example of someone getting sort of caught in the narrative, being challenged and letting go. Okay, it's not about you being the bad Zen master, it's just let's go and do the talk. And if you don't come with me, I'll do it. Very clear. And again, it's just that style of sort of openness that one recognizes often, but one can't always find it for oneself, because the habits of our self-life, if you call, are very strong and deeply ingrained, you know, especially as we all relatively middle-aged. We've had a long life of practice. Yeah. and all the complicatedness that that brings us, and our instinctive response to things that just go beyond that, that so it's not too heavy a word, that transcend it, that transcend that kind of crippling or diluting self-doubt and complicatedness and argument style. So that's kind of how the koan practice works. Okay. There are different ways of applying it, but we all have to find our own way through it. And of course, sometimes, or often, the teacher gets caught in your confusion, as it were. Tries to persuade or teach or explain. I'm a terrible explainer, you know. So that's your situation. How do you help me? How do you help the teacher? Okay. We're all in this life together. And already then, sort of undertone of blame or correctness or incorrectness disappears. How can I help you? It changes the whole tone of the interaction. So today what we're going to look at is another part of that story, which is the unfathomable old woman. And just by way of background, this character appears in a number of koans of traditional, they're all Chinese, the traditional koans, appears with a number of those stories and remains a sort of mysterious archetypal figure in pretty much every case. She kind of gets the better of the Zen master. That's her role. She somehow shows him how that he's unclear, that he's still attached and holding on to something. Sometimes even holding on to the idea of being the teacher. Of course, big trap. So she's this sort of shadowy, mythical figure that appears and disappears and can't be pinned down. And here she only really gets referred to at the beginning of the story, where it says, Qiming's old woman, and then it gives a long description of whether she is an old woman or a wife or a concubine or... I think they're just trying to be really polite and politically correct. But that's sort of academic style, I think, of this. But Qiming's old woman lived near the temple, and no one could fathom her. Qiming would go there whenever he had free time. That's right. And then the head monk went to the woman's house and looked inside, and Qiming was tending the hearth, feeding the fire, while the woman stirred the rice gruel. And then he says, in the hut, it seems to be, today's lecture day and assembly's been waiting a long time, and so on and so forth. So Qiming is in the hut, feeding the fire, she's stirring the rice, the head monk comes in, and there's this interaction. So, but my question for you is, if you were the old woman, how would you regard this whole scene that's playing out here. How would you respond to that? Oh, that's your question. That's your question today. So how would you help? That's really the question. How clear can you be? How can you add clarity to that moment? It's not that different to sitting around a sort of dinner table where everybody's talking about life today. And having a bit of a complaint and having a bit of a this and a that. How do you add to that? How do you contribute some sense of relief, some sense of clarity, some sense of love in that kind of moment? Perhaps just by way of talking stuff, there's clearly a place for deciding whether someone's doing their job or isn't, or is correct or isn't correct, and trying to persuade them in some way to reflect on that or obey, comply with it, and so on. One can get stuck in that. One can also get stuck in the opposite, that no rules apply and that anything goes. That's also a part of a duality. And if you're attached there, then the sort of Zen phrase is attached to emptiness. You're attached to emptiness. To nothing matters. Sufis used to have a wonderful, wonderful chant. Everything matters, nothing matters. Everything matters, nothing matters. So they're both parts of that duality. How do you find something that is not defined by either of those terms? Is there a kind of a freedom that we can exercise, find for ourselves in that? But if it's just to correct someone's behavior, you don't have to come to a Zen retreat to do that. Okay. Much better ways of doing that. There's something else. Something. Probably something you haven't thought about that appears when we are still and when we drop those kinds of tenacious, gripping thinkings. Two people are arguing. I'm right, I'm right. One bursts into tears. The whole interaction changes. So who's won the argument? Who's lost it? Suddenly those categories don't apply. They've fallen away. Farmer says, this is my land. The politician says, this is my land. They work the land together. Who's won? Who's lost? when Zen Master Subong used to come and teach here in the early days. The children were small. And he was meant to be giving a coming to the evening sit. Chanting and sitting doesn't appear. Margi goes to look for him. Finds him lying on the bed in the children's room. Girl on each side. A book on his chest. All three of them fast asleep. Is that a good Zen master? Thank you.